because it's the in deprogramming, one must, we have to unravel the programming script. We have to totally unravel it and find the lie. When you find the lie, then you can put the light on it, and the lie loses its power. And that's where the miracle is that your programs are lies. That's all they are. Was I an ugly little girl? No, I wasn't. Children aren't ugly. Children are beautiful. Mm-hmm. So I found the lie. They lied to me.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Would anybody ever love me? As far as the cult was concerned, no one could ever love me except the family, because I was unlovable. Because of the crimes that were done to me, they put the guilt and the responsibility on me instead of taking the responsibility for their own act as adults. They gave me their responsibility, and I wore it. I wore the coat of many colors. And so I had to weave a new coat, and that's where the two tracks helped. Did you follow that?
Yeah, and it seems that, they've been able to continue doing these horrific acts against other people by not taking responsibility or not taking the blame for their own actions and externalizing that.
And, that's true. I believe for every survivor out there, when you are programmed from the womb and you're totally under 100% under their control, when they tell you to cry, you cry. When they tell you to scream, you scream. When they tell you to eat, you eat. I mean, you're totally controlled by every move of your, every facet of your own life is controlled by them. I happen to be a part of myself that, and I'll be very honest with you, is that when Fritz found me in my system, and he told me that I was a little girl, I just looked at him, and I said, "You're crazy. I am not a little girl. I am a kitten." I looked in the mirror, and I had a porcelain face, and on that face is a kitten.
Hmm.
And that's how they programmed me. They had so dehumanized me as a sex kitten that I didn't even know that I was a child. And when I went through the memories so that I could have an identity for myself, I realized that to be a little girl was the most painful thing in the whole world, because every time I was human in any sense of the word, or I thought I had any humanism, as far as being a little girl, I was so severely tortured that I reached a place in my own mind that I never wanted to be a little girl. It was too painful to be a little girl. They set up two cages for us. One cage was a cage full of nice little, beautiful little kittens. One was white, one was calico, and one was black. And there was a beautiful Persian gray kitten in this cage. Next to it is where I was, and I was 3 years old, and I was put in this cage with a pan that was hooked to electrical current, and every time I wanted water or to eat something and I touched that pan, I was shocked. That's just one little example. I was shamed. I was spit on. I was totally humiliated as a little girl in that cage for being a little girl. But the kittens next to me, they were the family, which was the Illuminati, including my father and including Green. They made sure that the kittens were fed whatever they wanted to eat as kittens. They were loved, they were petted, they were cooed, they were loved. This went on for a number of days within the trauma of this setting. And after all the trauma I had gone through, I guess my little mind decided, fine, I don't want to be a little girl, I'd rather be that little kitten, because that little kitten in that cage, it gets to eat, it has clothes on, and it's not laying in its feces. It's not being shamed, it's not being spit, it's not being kicked. When I went through the memories of this, my body was so bruised from the kicks that I had received from the Illuminati family and the programming that I had to wear the bruises on my body until I worked through the memory again. That just gives you just a little example of how far they go to make sure they get what they want.
Just extremely sadistic.
Very sadistic. I mean, even as I talk about it, and I haven't thought of it for about 3 years, I see these little kittens are very powerful in my mind even today as I'm talking on the phone. Mm-hmm. I see these little kittens and how well they were treated. But as a little girl, my father totally rejected me at that point. I loved my father very, very much because I was conditioned to do so. I loved him in his gentleness, and I loved him in his weakness, and I loved him in his strength, and I loved him when he was bad. It didn't matter because the mind was set up to accept whatever he was.
Hmm. Do you feel your father was also a victim of programming?
Oh, I have no doubt in my mind that my father was a multiple. My father was a genius at every level, but he had a gentle side. He was a musician as well as Satanist, and like I said, he'd worked for the CIA. He was a 33rd degree Mason plus. There's many levels beyond 33, by the way. He was a grandmaster. He sat on the Grand Druid Council. He was a very wise man, just not wise in the right things.
Hmm.
It's too bad that his learning hadn't been applied in other directions. He had went far. I can't respect my father for who he is.
Do you think he had a choice in the matter?
No, I don't, because it was generational.
Mm-hmm.
We came from a generational family, and he was trapped as I was trapped. But the difference between me and my father is there was a part of my father that knew. Even when the good side of my father that loved his family, worked in the workplace, was in the military. I mean, there was a real positive part about my father. He was a people lover. He loved people, and people loved him. But I think that there was a time in my father's life when he realized what he was and what he was doing. I think that the barriers within his own mind, within his own multiplicity, had broken down to a point that he knew, but he also knew that he was in over his head. It would cost him his life to move away or to change directions because he was too far in.
And then obviously the difference being that you chose, and you made the choice to break away and to fight that.
Right. And there's a willful act within the family, within the Illuminati family. There is a willful act there. And I can honestly say the things we did because we were groomed. We were programmed to do so. But when the light was put on and we went through the memory work and we had a choice, a free choice to say, do we or don't we, our system didn't want to. We wanted to do right. We wanted that hope, that chance to be what we really wanted to be from that was born into us, and that was to be good. And that's the simplest way to say it, because I still feel very childish in this. I feel like a child that wants to be good. I don't want to be bad.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like what was done to me, and I don't like what has been done to others. It's been totally unfair. It has destroyed many, many lives. The one thing that I wanted to say when Chris was working with me, when I had just come out of the system and he was working with me on a daily basis, I asked him, I says, well, these children in the world, do their fathers rape them? He said, no, good fathers do not rape their children. He said, it threw me for a loop. It absolutely threw me for a loop. And I stood there and I looked at him and I said, well, I really feel sorry then for these children in this world because they're not loved. They're not loved. He says, oh, but they are loved. I said, oh, no. If the fathers aren't raping their children, then they're not loved. Because, see, I thought rape was love. That's pretty sick.
They've just turned those ideas upside down.
Yeah, yeah. And I felt, in fact, the first time I'd ever had a tear in my eye was when he told me that children, little girls, and little boys aren't normally raped by their fathers. That is not a standard of living in which you live. And it upset me to such a point that was the first time I'd ever felt a tear on my face.
Hmm.
Because I felt so bad that children were not being loved by their fathers. And it took me a long time to understand the difference. Because right is wrong and wrong is right. That's how you're programmed.
Hmm. Incredible.
Isn't it something? I mean, when you really think about it, I look back on it now and I cannot believe what the ability they had to do what they did to my mind and so many other survivors out there, to what degree they would go.
And especially to children as well.
Yeah.
just incredibly evil.
At any turn,
evil.
They had cages on the walls. They put us in the cages, and the monkeys or apes got to take care of us. We had three of them. One fed us, one beat us, and one raped us to dehumanize us.
God.
So.
Oh, boy.
And I still wake up, and here I am in my 50s, and when I was working on the memories at Inukern and the cages, well, see, whatever they want in the system, if they want a particular part in the mind to be a particular something, then they have to set the stage in order for that to come about.
So that they're manipulating a particular context to achieve a certain end?
Yes, yeah, a certain image within the mind, yeah. Because you can, a child is has creativity, but they have to give us the creativity in which to work from, because you have to understand that the mind is protected by the family in that it's hidden within itself. It's like a box within itself. Boxes and boxes and many, many boxes, and each box has a family within the mind, or it's on set up like a grid, a 13 by 13 grid and 13 deep. So your hidden parts, there is no influence to the outside world. See, when I came out into the world and I met Fritz, I had never known what the world was. I'd never had the freedom of knowing how to go to the grocery store or where was it or what was it. I didn't know, because I was only programmed to do what they wanted me to do. Hmm. They'd wake me up, give me my program, put me on the right track as to where they wanted me to be. I would go do what they wanted me to do. As soon as I did it, back to sleep I went. So I had no influence. When Fritz told me that I had a family and a mother that was still living, I thought the man was crazy. I really did. And here's something else that'll just throw you for a loop, is I have 7 grandchildren. And that means I have 3 children of my own that are grown. And when he introduced me to my son, which was 30, and he's a pilot, and when they introduced me to my son, out of courtesy, I just said, well, it's very nice to meet you, in my mind. But afterwards, I told Fritz, I said, you are absolutely crazy. You think I'm crazy. Boy, you guy, you've had it. You're telling me I'm programmed. You have to realize I'm programmed as a kitten, a sex kitten. When I look in the mirror, I have a porcelain face. I'm a kitten, and I'm 17 years old, and I'm not supposed to age. And when you look at me, and I'm 50 years old, you look at me and take a picture of me, I'm 17. Hmm. I still look 17. But the point is that I was so totally 100% programmed that when Fritz wanted to give me the truth of what happened to my life, my mind couldn't even receive it because I had so much programming.
Hmm. And
it took 2 years for me to realize I wasn't a kitten before I ever believed him. 2 years of hard work every single day to break down the lies. That's how strong my defense was. And here I look at all these kids. I mean, here's what I said to Fritz. I said, Fritz, you are absolutely crazy. You expect me to believe that this is my son? You tell me my son is 30 years old. I have no recall. I didn't carry him. I didn't remember him when he played as a child. I had no identity with this child whatsoever. That's how dark it was inside my world.
God.
I said, he's 30 years old and I'm 17. 17 and he's 30. Hey, wait a minute here, Fritz. Something doesn't add up. You're crazy. Because I'm only 17. How can I have a 30-year-old son? You expect me to bite that apple, and I'm going to bite it, and I'm going to believe this, right? I mean, that's the way the mind is. That's just one example.
Mm-hmm.
That he introduced me to my mother. He had introduced me to my sister. I had 2 sisters that I didn't know about.
So as you went through your memory work, did you regain those parts of your lives in terms of knowing who your sons were and...
I have had to build relationships, and of course, as I was able to get stronger and work on the memories and so forth, and first I had to acknowledge the lie, the big lie, and that is that my father lied to me. And that was a very harsh lie for me because I felt my father had left me.
Mm-hmm.
But remember, I thought right was wrong and wrong was right. So everything my father had done, they had also given me the scripts to go with it. So I could not believe that my father could have ever lied to me. Not my father. So I had to first acknowledge that my father did lie to me. And that was I cannot express how hard that was for me. Because if I accepted the first lie, then I had to accept all the other lies. And I didn't want to.
Mm-hmm.
I did not want my father defaced. And then as time went on, months went on, and I had to face what he was. And I had to face what he had done to others. And if he did this to me and I was his child, oh my God, what has he done to so many other children as being a programmer?
Mm-hmm.
And that just about killed me.
Then that must have been devastating to you know, yourself in terms of what your view of the world was at that time.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to thank you very much, Cisco, for joining us on this show. I know it's very difficult to talk about these issues, and I really admire your enormous courage in exposing this.
And thank you very much. Thank you for asking.
Earth sounds.
We've been listening to an interview with Cisco Wheeler, a survivor of Illuminati family and U.S. government mind control. Tapes of this radio series are finally available of all the shows of this series at the office of CKLN 380 Victoria in Jorgensen Hall on Ryerson University campus. And tapes are $8 each, and transcripts are $3 each, and catalogs are available listing all the shows. And I'd like to spend this next few minutes just commenting on the last weekend's CBC docudrama, The Sleep Room. My opinion was a little too heavy on the drama and too little on the docu, based on what we've heard in this radio series about Ewan Cameron and his role in CIA mind control on children. It was a two-part series, and the first part was I found particularly misleading in portraying Cameron as someone with good but misguided intentions, especially using the reason that he left the Allen Memorial was due to finding out his patients were not being cured. Also, for what it left out about Cameron's role in CIA mind control technology development, including his involvement with experiments on children. And other disinformation, they portrayed the CIA's motive was just to keep up to the communists with mind control technology, and the portrayal that the CIA just started experimenting with mind control, when it's a documented fact that the CIA had been producing mind control programmed agents 10 years previous to that. They also portrayed Cameron as not being concerned with military and intelligence applications for his work. I find that a little hard to swallow. And not being aware of the seemingly not being aware of the electroshock's effects of wiping out memory when he was an electroshock expert and trained many other psychiatrists how to use electroshock. Other disinformation was that the experiments didn't amount to anything and were ultimately useless to the CIA when they have taken mind control technology far beyond what it was portrayed. And that that it was useless is a lie. And if the CBC had done its homework, maybe they wouldn't be perpetrating this lie. I don't know. Maybe they would. They made no attempt to link Cameron to the other well-documented doctors involved in MKUltra or what they were trying to accomplish, what their end goal was in creating Manchurian candidate-type mind control operatives. The second part of the movie dealt with the survivors' battle for legal justice. Some good things, I thought, were the portrayal of the Canadian government reps covering up for the CIA and the sheer sliminess of the CIA's scum lawyers. However, I think it may have had the effect for people watching it, especially people that aren't aware of what's going on in mind control, that justice was eventually served, even though the amount of money that the survivors eventually received was really a joke in light of what these people went through. And I felt that it had the feeling that the CBC considered this movie now closes the book on mind control atrocities, when that's far from the truth. These atrocities, as we've heard in this series, are continuing today. I thought it was unusual that David and Valerie Orlico were excluded from being characters in the film when they were the driving force behind the lawsuit. And also particularly because David was a Canadian MP and the weight that would have carried to bring about the suit. I think it may have been satisfying for survivors of Cameron's atrocious experiments to have seen the movie And how the survivors were portrayed in their struggle for justice. But the reality is that these people were not the only victims of Cameron and all of the other mind control doctors across Canada and the U.S. I do hope that the movie is raising public awareness of mind control and what Cameron did, and hopefully will encourage public discussion about this. But I think many people might think that this happened a long time ago. It was settled. End of story. Well, the story does not end there, folks. It's continuing right here on CKLN. And we're continuing the series next week. Stay tuned. We'll have an interview with Bryce Taylor, a former mind control slave used by the White House as a presidential model sex slave and by the CIA and other intelligence groups. And she's also the author of the book Starshine, One Woman's Valiant Escape from Mind Control. You've been listening to CKLN 88.1. Coming up next is Aquí Nuestra America. Thank you.
We'll be right back.